If you're innovating, creating, or making a difference,
this show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
Recently, Over Coffee had the opportunity to be a part of a first-time ever event. We conducted on-site interviews at the first-ever Mystic Dragon Book Festival in the City of Industry. In the course of the day, we interviewed six of the exhibiting authors and artists.
One of the absolute best quotes I've ever heard about a beginning came from someone who described moving out on your own as a wonderful, scary experience. That is exactly what our next author is experiencing right now. Ellie Lieberman has started her journey as an author. Yay! I hear a whole lot of applause, and let's hear that a little bit louder. I hear cheers. That's better. She started her journey as an author with Society's Foundlings, her first book. And by the way, Society's Foundlings is about four young men who are on the beginning of their journey as well. Ellie, welcome. It's great to have you here on the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I would like to know, first of all, what do you remember very best about your growing up years in New Jersey that led to your becoming a storyteller and an author?
That would actually be my mother. I like to say I became an author at my mother's keyboard. She would type out stories and she would read them to me. And we had a deal going on that if I continued to brush her hair, she would let me stay up past my bedtime and she would read me the stories she wrote.
Oh my goodness, what a great deal. So I assumed you continued to brush her hair.
Yes.
And she wrote a story for you. What do you remember very best? Your mom, by the way, is author Barbara Austin Lieberman, whom we interviewed earlier. What do you remember best about her writing the story, The Master of Ravenwood, for you?
The whole thing. It's the whole thing. It was seeing the characters come to life and hearing them come to life and the twists and turns of the story itself.
When did you go from there to telling stories of your own?
Well, when I was very young, I would take a sketch pad and I would draw a picture on one side and I would start writing stories on the other side. And my mom was a huge inspiration for that, and it sort of grew into this.
What a fun thing. And how did this come about for you? How'd you come to write Society's Foundlings?
I was actually not in the best place, and there was this message coming from all over of, you know, this was the time of my life and just wait till you're older, and the fact that the way I was feeling was, it was like it was never going to get better. And so that was a huge inspiration for Society's Foundlings, the idea that because I was 16 or 18, I wasn't experiencing the real world.
And in fact, I wonder why people tell 16-year-olds this is the time of your life. I remember it being very difficult when I was 16.
Yeah.
It's not any easier now, is it?
No, it's definitely not.
Let's look at what's happening in Society's Foundlings. In fact, I'd love to have you read before we go on. Would you read to me from Society's Foundlings?
What's she doing here? Math voices all of our disdain and thoughts. I don't know. Guess I should find out. I start to fiddle with my fingers. They file out of the car, past her, and into the house, not without some comments thrown her way first. You know, they kill animals for that fur. Clem. Your shoes alone could feed a third world country. Math. If it isn't the wicked bitch of the West. Carver. Then she looks to me, her eyes questioning if I'm going to do anything. Just let them talk to her that way. I say nothing. Nice friend, she rolls her eyes. You're one to talk. Arms folded, she leans against her car. Go on a day trip, did you? Her eyes narrow suspiciously. What's it to her? It's none of her business. Thought you and Prince Charming in there needed your paychecks. How is it you can't pay for lunch in a restaurant, but you can waste all that gas driving around? She doesn't know what she's talking about, and that pisses me off. It's a privilege for her to not get it. How nice that must be. My cheeks burn. Is there a reason you're standing in front of my house? Yeah, she snaps her gum annoyed. There is. I came to tell you that you are a jerk. There was a really mean thing you did in the restaurant yesterday. My friends and I were just trying to be nice. We don't deserve to be walked out on and yelled at like that. I laugh. Were we at the same lunch? Save your breath for someone who cares, I find myself thinking, and turn to walk inside, contemplating letting the door slam in her face. She grabs my arm to stop me. So that's it? Hurt reflects both her face and tone, but to some extent I think I've stopped caring. Apathy would be fully surging through me if it wasn't for the fireflies in the back of my mind. We're just not friends anymore? Friends? I question, reminded of our previous conversation before the restaurant. Were we ever? Could we ever? And why is she so desperate for my friendship? You must care for me even just a little, she insists. When my friends told you they thought I might hurt myself, you went out looking for me. I shake my head because I can't keep playing these games. I've got enough on my plate, and quite frankly, seeing her standing there in her expensive clothes by her expensive car, I hate her. I hate the fact she does not understand and can never understand, that she does not need her job as much as I need mine. That I can't figure out what's better, a crappy present so my future is better, or a better present so my future is crappy. And that she never needs to wonder this, or whether or not her father loves her. You know who pulls the type of crap you pull? Little kids. Little kids who are pissed off that they aren't getting their way on the playground and run off so all their friends will run after them. What is it you want? She asks me, exasperated, injured, staring into my eyes like she is searching my soul. There's so much more to this question. So many times I've been asked it, sometimes even by myself. What do I want? When I was younger, my mom loved to garden, but the flowers would never grow. She kept planting seeds even though nothing would grow. She just kept trying. I don't understand, because you can't. What does this have to do with anything? I don't fiddle with my fingers, and there's no apology on the tip of my tongue when I say, I am my mother's son.
You and I are listening to Ellie Lieberman, author of Society's Families. She's just been reading an episode. If I'm correct, you're speaking with Samson's voice here.
Yes.
When Nicole Brenneman has come to the house.
Yes.
Your book's about four different young men, all facing a different challenge. What's the challenge each one's facing?
Well, each one faces issues of belonging. There's struggles with money and family and friendship.
And I really like what you said just now in Samson's voice, because you have a gift of summing up a moment in just a few words where he says it's a privilege for her to not get it. That's something that's really unusual, I think, for a writer to be able to do.
Thank you.
How did that come to you? How can you speak so authentically in a man's voice when you're a young woman?
I'm not entirely sure. The characters just come to me the way they come to me. I think the simplicity, or the being able to say a big message in a very few words, actually came from... That was inspired by a quote by Jack Kerouac. He said, "One day I will find the right words and they will be simple." And that has been a huge help for my writing. Before Society's Foundlings, a story that will never see the light of day, used a lot of imagery and obscure phrasing, and it was just too long to try to get a message across, and that one quote helped me pare it down to something like Society's Foundlings.
In fact, you have a character here who's very much inspired by Jack Kerouac and who passes them on. Would you tell me about him, please?
Carver? He comes from a very troubled past, and he has a lot of guilt over some of the mistakes he made in high school. And Jack Kerouac, he absolutely loves Jack Kerouac and the book On the Road.
And what does he do with this when Clem comes by?
He likes to give Clem books, and one of them is On the Road, and it's a special thing that the two characters share between each other.
What's going on with Samson and Nicole Brenneman that you have just read the story about?
So in this scene, there was a conflict at a restaurant that occurred between the two of them that was an attempt to make up for a kind of prank she pulled that wasn't funny at all. And it hurt Samson a lot. And it hurt him even more after the argument at the restaurant. And for her to show up at the house, which is basically a sanctuary for all four of them, it feels like she is invading.
Why is that so important to her? The question that Samson asked, why is it so important to you to be friends with me? What would her answer be?
Well, that is a very good question. I don't know if she herself would be able to answer that. I can tell you, the reason why Samson, I feel like, is Nicole Brenneman, is the fact that she is so different. There, for me at least, the character Samson feels like he's sort of separated from his group of friends, and she is so very different, and in a lot of ways, I think it's what he wants in life, the expensive cars and the lack of issues with money and the perceived lack of issues with the father.
She personifies this then for him.
Yeah.
What's going on with Math? We never hear his voice till the very end.
Math is sort of a constant in all three of the other characters' lives. And it's sort of this idea that everything's okay because math is okay. And he's sort of ignored. There's a lot of ignoring him. There's a lot of him being pushed aside. And he has a lot of issues going on underneath all the everything he puts out, his mask that he wears. And by the end of the book, you learn that a lot of things have been piling up, and it's that sort of brings them together. Is
I like the phrase, his mask that he wears, especially. That really sums it up quickly. What's going on with Clem?
Clem comes from, they call it a very loud house, and for me personally, I always imagined it as verbally abusive. You have a lot of yelling, you have a lot of stuff going on at home, and he in particular, I think, feels very insignificant and very small. And the other thing about Clem in particular that I always found fascinating after rereading it was the fact that he never really mentions other characters outside of his friends, with the exception of Amy Bishop. And I think that is sort of the way he views his world. His world is his friends, and it's that sort of helps him get by.
I see almost a parallel between him with Amy Bishop and Samson with Nicole.
Yeah, there could be a parallel there.
That's kind of an interesting pattern there.
Yeah, I never noticed that before, actually.
You're listening to an on-site interview from Mystic Dragons Book Festival in the City of Industry. You and I are listening to new author Ellie Lieberman, who just published her first book, a young adult novel entitled Society's Foundlings.
What was really fun to me, reading this, and came as a surprise, is I know you as the artist who creates all these incredible, enchanting fairy doors and fairy worlds. And wow, do we have a dark story here, but with a lot of beauty in it.
Well, I think the ultimate message is that of hope. You know, for as much as there is dark stuff going on and the characters have to deal with some pretty heavy stuff, there is the field of fireflies, and there is that moment where Carver is in the car with Samson saying those three words are enough for now. And I think there is that message of hope and just taking it one moment at a time.
And in fact, that was what I got from it. I love the fireflies scene. That's one
Thank
I
you.
Won't ruin by saying anything. People are just going to have to read it. However, I would like to know, at the very end, Matt says something to the general effect of he's really scared and everything hurts. What would you say as an author, as a young person who is going through some dark times when you wrote this, to anybody who's in that position?
You are not alone. I mean, that is the biggest thing, is that you aren't alone, and there are people who can be there with you and for you and can commiserate.
Please tell me the story of your book itself, Society's Foundlings, now published. You wrote down the story, and what happened next?
And I sent it to my brother and my best friend to read, and they read it, and they liked it. And I had my mom read it, and I had Jessica Johnson, who did my cover art, she read it too. She was one of my first readers, and from there we took the book, and my mom helped me put it on CreateSpace to publish it, and yeah.
What goes through your mind when you look at CreateSpace, and you see your book out there, you're published?
Oh, it's just so incredible. It's hard to believe it's real.
What's next?
Currently, I'm working on a short story about a dragon for a dragon anthology. I'm also working on a story called Solving for X, which is kind of dystopian in a way, I guess. And then there's also a love story I've been writing.
And when will we see, I can guess on the dragon because of what your mom was saying, but when will we see Solving for X, for example?
I have no idea.
I was wondering, too, of writing in the voices of four different, very different young men, which one presented the biggest creative challenge for you in Society's Foundlings?
Oh, that's another good question. None, actually. There weren't many challenges in writing the characters. This was a story that just sort of flowed.
So it kind of came to you?
Yeah, and it just came from there.
What is your advice to other young writers that are getting their stories down and getting published? How is it different than you thought it might be, if at all?
For as magical and amazing as you think it will be, it is 10 times more magical and amazing.
Oh, you're giving me goosebumps now. That's fantastic.
And In regards to advice, the best advice I ever got was from my mom, Barb Lieberman, and it's just right. Just put it down. Don't worry about rules or page limit or word count or genre or who would read it. Just write. And then the Jack Kerouac quote about one day I will find the words and they will be simple has been a huge help to me. And another one was a quote by Mark Twain, which was about Huckleberry Finn. I shall like it even if no one else does. And I think that is a great piece of advice. Just, you know, you need to like your own work. It doesn't matter if anybody else does, but you need to like it.
I really love that. And that seems to have been the theme for today, talking to several different artists, several different authors. Everybody seems to say create for yourself.
Yes.
So far, would you say Society's Foundlings is your proudest work or something else on which you're working?
At this point, it's probably Society's Foundlings, but I haven't finished any of my other stories yet, so we'll see where that goes.
I really want to know what happens next with your four boys. Is there any chance there'll be a sequel?
I'm not going to rule it out. At this point, there's nothing in the works for a sequel, but there's possibly something in the future.
And we'll kind of leave it at that. Suppose somebody listening wants to become an author. Are there resources or creative writing classes or anything that you would recommend besides simply just sitting down and doing it?
I actually did not take creative writing classes. On Facebook, there is a group called The Right Stuff that my mom and I started, which is sort of a community of writers, whether you're published or not published yet or whatever you're working on. And that has been a huge support, and I think that would be a huge help.
Look up The Right Stuff on Facebook, WRITE Stuff.
Yeah.
That sounds like a great resource. And are there any other free resources you would like people to know about?
Well, CreateSpace is a wonderful place to self-publish, and it puts it right on Amazon for you.
Great. And what would you really love people to know from your work, from Society's Foundlings, from anything you may publish in the future about innovation, creativity, and making a difference?
You can do it. Just, you know, put pen to paper and do it.
Ellie, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
You and I have been listening to Ellie Lieberman, author of Society's Foundlings and of Solve for X and of a dragon story coming up in the future and hopefully of a lot of other things as she continues her journey as an author. This is Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon, back with you in a little bit. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. The music you're hearing is royalty-free production music provided by Pond5 at pond5.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.